right, welcome to another episode of The Catholic Couple, having fun with faith, family, and friends. I'm your co-host, Bobby Fredrickson, and with me, as always, my beautiful wife,
Katie Fredrickson.
I'm the convert Catholic, and she's the
cradle Catholic.
And here we are in a very special episode on StreamYard with Anthony D'Ambrosio on this awesome new movie that's coming out about St. Maximilian Kolbe, Triumph of the Heart.
All right, thanks for coming on, Anthony.
I'm so excited to be here.
All right. So we definitely have to, in the show notes, link up the preview or the trailer, because it is I'm so excited for this. Can you tell us a little bit about your project and about, you know, what we're going to be talking about in this episode?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess we'll just start with I'm working on a movie about St. Maximilian Kolbe, particularly that covers his passion. So the last 14 days or so of his life. And the focus is on, I think many of us have heard this story really told more from the perspective of the man who was saved in the lineup, Francis Guy Niczek, who Kolbe traded his life for. But yeah. I personally was very interested in, as an artist, and honestly, just as somebody who is struggling in my own faith, I was really interested in the stories of these other men who didn't get that, I guess, the more traditional happy ending, and who were in that cell really starving to death and facing a really horrible end, but who were there with a saint and who had a saint with them accompanying them through that. And so I really wanted to understand a little bit more about that and about what that must have been like. And so the movie that we're working on really tells Kolbe's story from that vantage point.
So what kind of research goes into that? What kind of, like, how did you find out the stories of these other individuals?
Yeah, it's a really good question. There's any time that you want to do a historical movie, you have an incredible amount of historical research that you have to do. Mm-hmm. And because of Kolbe's canonization, there's a lot that's known about him. And there's an incredible amount of eyewitness testimonies from people who were there at the time. So we know certain things that that are really important parts of the story. Perhaps the most important one is that Kolbe was often found in the middle of the cell with the other men huddled together praying the rosary or singing songs. Mm-hmm. And that is, for anybody that's been with somebody who's been grieving, who's in doubt, and who's suffering tremendously, you would know how miraculous it is to be able to bring somebody to a place of conversion to be able to do that. And that he was killed, he was executed not alone, but with four other people who had also survived 14 days with him. So it was a miracle that Kolbe survived as long as he did, but it was even more so a miracle that he was able to bring these other men to a courageous and hopeful death in such a dark place. I think that in terms of the particular stories and names of the men who were in the cell, we actually don't know that. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any record kept of who those men were. We only know who was in Auschwitz at the time and who died that month. And so I was able to do research into that particular demographic. Mainly it was people who were political prisoners and who were being exterminated as a part of the Nazis' terror campaign to sort of break the spirit of Poland. Mm-hmm. And so these were people in media, people who were leaders in the resistance movement, people who were part of the military or the sort of the political party that was there before. So these are all people who were leaders and who were known entities in Poland at the time.
Well, and St. Maximilian Kolbe, he was involved with media as well. He had like a magazine or something, if I am correct, right?
Yeah, that's right. So he's, if you know Bishop Barron, he's basically like a Polish Bishop Barron in World War II era Poland. So that's the a good archetype to think about when you're thinking about like who was this guy Kolbe? He was kind of the biggest media celebrity in the church, perhaps in Europe.
I didn't know that he was well known before going in.
Yeah, he was. Everybody in Auschwitz would have known who he was. He was close with the president and with other people high up in Polish politics. So, and I think that any time that you're in these sorts of groups where it's lots of leaders in media and politics, etc., they all kind of know each other. So the same would have been the case in Auschwitz at the time. All of these people would have probably have known, certainly known Kolbe, but would also likely have known each other before the war.
Wow.
Oh, I never thought of that. That's part of the story.
Yeah, that's, I knew some just, I have a great devotion for St. Kolbe. I seen the video maybe, 10 years ago. It was featured in the Alpha course that we helped run. And I remember the first time I saw it, it was on the episode of Why Did Jesus Have to Die? And they used him as an example of what that looked like. And it just struck me. And I actually go to a Polish monastery for daily mass, and they have outside on the grounds, they have a Maximilian Kolbe statue that's surrounded by like a huge thing, like barbed wire. And it's probably like 20 feet, like a round circle. And it's a, like a 12 foot statue of St. Maximilian. And so yeah, I'm reminded, I always walk over there. It's just a you know, it's always touched me. That's why I was really excited to get to know a little bit more about this story. And I saw the trailer. I was like, wow, because I, you know, unfortunately, you know, the funding and stuff like that, it's like some of the movies are cheesy, and this looks like it's, this
yeah,
could be,
this
could be
this
something that could be nominated for like an Academy Award. It's just like, it's the way it's done.
So yeah, you say in the trailer that you guys went to Poland without even enough funding to be able to see the end, right? The end of the production, right? So tell us about how you are receiving funding for this. And because it, when you watch the trailer, it's very well done. It's very good production. It's very high quality. And how are you able to sustain that? And what are your hopes to finish? And what does that look like?
Yeah, thank you. And it's really been amazing to see how kind of the Catholic world has responded to our little project. Because, you know, before we went out there, there's very few people who knew about what we were doing. And it was really built on the backs of this small grassroots movement in particularly in Dallas, Texas, but that was joined by some other investors kind of across the U.S. But really lots of, you know, people who put in $5,000 or $10,000 to help us make it happen before we had any proof or any trailer to show, you know, the quality. During the pandemic, I started working on the script really in earnest. And then when I started to share a little bit about what I was doing with some other people of humble means, but who cared a lot about media, we started to see an immediate response and people wanting to help us make it happen much faster than we even expected. And so I made a deal with them that I would, our team would go out and shoot the movie this summer if we raised the amount of money that we needed by April, particularly by Easter. And we were only halfway there before that week, Holy Week. And I got a call from somebody that I had met who was a convert to Catholicism and who had heard about what we were doing and who just told me, hey, I don't know how much you guys need, but whatever is left, I'm going to write a check for it. I was like,
wow.
Going to be $130,000. And he was like, okay, well, you're going to have that in the mail by next week. And yeah, so I called up our producer, who's one of the, she works on the team of The Chosen. I called up Cecilia and I was like, hey, we've got to start planning our production because we just got greenlit. And yeah, we went there without the funds that we needed to finish, but with a certain confidence based on what we were seeing in terms of how people were responding, that we would be able to, that we would be able to make it happen. And the team was just, it's really was just myself, our producer, Cecilia Stevenson, who, like I said, works on The Chosen, and then our director of photography, Andrew, who hadn't worked on a feature-length film before, but who I've shot many short films with and who I know is like kind of a savant. He's like Caravaggio with a camera. Wow. So when we got out there, we didn't know anyone. We didn't know where we were going to even be living for the 2 months that we needed to get ready for the production. We were going from hostel to hostel and Airbnb to Airbnb and asking people if we could stay at their houses. Ultimately, just the generosity of the Catholic world ended up coming around us and helping us make it happen.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, we we also, our parish that we came from before, I actually talked to him today, our old priest is from Poland. So our parish where Katie's Polish, and the parish where she grew up, and I'm a convert, and where I made my sacraments was traditionally mostly Polish. So it's like, it's just such a beautiful story. And like, I mean, I got some bad news today from a friend who's Polish, but I digress. But I was just struck by how these things, just the trust comes in and how basically the funding comes together. So once you're there, is there any kind of like doubt? You said something about your faith journey. I know like this is, you said you struggled with your faith. Was this something to help solidify your faith, or is this something you just like, I'm just going to trust, I'm just going to go, or is this like a battle?
Oh yeah, it was. Yeah, that's a really big question.
Yeah, right.
Can you unpack your life, please?
Yeah, right.
Let me just, you know, open this up and dig in there with you guys. Yeah, it was totally a battle. In some ways, I would say that my faith journey, I struggled a lot in my faith before I started writing this project. And it was actually encountering Colby's story that helped me to recover my faith during a time of like deep, deep suffering and doubt. And actually the seeds of the story came to me during that season. But when I was going out there, I would say that it felt to me like a redemption of that suffering that I went through. And a way that God was showing me how everything that I had been, how all of the suffering that I'd been through that kind of primed me for the work that we were doing, was useful. It was being used. It was being brought to the altar as a living sacrifice that was actually being, being fruitful. And I could see that so clearly in the way that God was moving in my life, and bringing people around me that, that I could help, that felt in some way ministered to themselves by the way that they were participating in the project. There are so many stories of faiths being rediscovered or deepened, of conversions that happened even just on the set of the project. And so, yeah, it was a strengthening for me of my faith. Of course there was crazy fear. I mean, the whole thing felt like, I felt like I was surfing a 60-foot wave. Like there's this incredible power, you know, where you can feel this groundswell kind of coming up under us, this power that is not coming from us or from me, certainly, that's so beyond me. When you talk about the story of Poland, the story of Colby, so many people have been deeply moved by him that, it was like we tapped into something that was really powerful. But that energy was always just on the very verge of like destroying me.
You know, right. Well, you're very blessed. You have a huge blessing from God to be able to see the fruits of your efforts in so many different variables. First of all, that is very cool to see that like firsthand, the fruits of your own personal suffering and then the fruits of this project. And is it fully done? Are you at the end? Are you now into a release mode? Is the movie completely done? What do you have left?
Yeah, so we've shot the whole movie. We came back with all of that in the can in November. And right now we're raising money for our post-production process. So once you finish shooting, you have 40 hours of footage and audio that all has to get synced up and organized. It costs thousands of dollars just to get it all on one hard drive, you know? So compressing all of that down, and then the creation of the music and the creation of the sound, the soundscape, all of that stuff that happens that makes the movie a movie, is very expensive. So that's the process that we're in right now. We're beginning that, we're in the edit, but we're also running a crowdfunding campaign to help us raise the funds that we need to do the rest of it really well.
What's your hopes for release? Like, what's your time frame? How long does that typically take? Or with crowdfunding, do you not really fully know?
Yeah, well, we will be done with our crowdfunding in 2 weeks. So we will know by March 8th how much money we have. Mm-hmm. And that'll give us a really good beat on how long it's going to take us. But our hope is to release it on Colby's feast day or somewhere in that week. That, of course, will depend on the distribution agreement that we end up nailing down. We're in conversations with Angel Studios right now, as well as others that are interested. And when we have our completed film, we'll be able to negotiate those deals and start setting those deadlines with them.
I think it's really cool that, because you mentioned Angel Studios and you mentioned The Chosen, you know, they're having Cabrini come out very soon, right? That these Catholic saints are also being, I think they intrigue all Christians. So I know St. Maximilian Kolbe does. Like you mentioned, he was on Alpha because he was, whether he, and Alpha is a non-denominational Christian program, right? So I think that it's a very cool movement. What's happening right now is that we have these Catholic saints that are capturing the attention of the whole Christian community, and we're allowed to have artists like you put out like quality. I think that you put in the advertisement that we watched that, you know, no more the lame, like, oh, what, it like kind of sappy, like,
yeah,
low,
yeah,
like budget.
The Kirk Cameron, when fireproof and stuff. No, I'm not throwing shade.
Don't throw shade on Kirk Cameron.
But
those movies are popular.
But it takes money.
We could even look at a lot of Catholic productions are actually super lame. Kirk Cameron, those aren't that bad. Like I'm talking like, if you watch What I Grew Up With as a Cradle Catholic, this is fantastic. You have no idea the stuff we had to watch in Catholic school. Oh my gosh. Well, but the fact that too, that you spoke about, right, that you talked about the grit, you know, the grittiness too of the truth of these stories. You know, a lot of times faith movies will just, you know, overlook those things or sanitize them, you know, right? But to look like at the real human experience and make it relevant to people, I think that's huge too. So I think there's a capturing of two things. I think you're capturing a greater audience and just Christian audiences in general, but also even a greater audience as human beings and the human being experience. And it is such a relevant topic, no matter what walk of faith that you are. I think that it's a cool movement happening, and I'm glad it's quality things being done, you know.
Yeah, why do you think that's the case, that Catholic films or art in the past has tended to sanitize and cheesify stuff outside of money? Because I think we know, everybody is aware in some way that, yeah, we aren't working with the biggest Hollywood budgets here. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me like there's more than that. It's more than just like a question of money.
I think
because
that's
certainly,
just, yeah.
Certainly, like, we are working with a budget that is micro budget. Like, when you talk about budgets for movies, we are so lean that it's I think that we've made something rather quality with the funds that we have because of our artistic sort of vision.
I would ask the question, why are Holy Cards so lame?
It's a great question.
Because these people,
why hasn't somebody fixed it?
I mean, we have St. Lucy, you know, she lost her eyeballs, but she's still that holy roller like this, but just an eyeball's on a plate, you know? Like, they're like, what about like I like things that show these saints in their live action, like their actual, like, living out the faith or something really difficult they went through. I don't know. I think that a lot of it has to do with putting saints on pedestals and making it almost, you know, there was an over reverence, I guess, right? And so we're in a generation now that craves authenticity and the genuine, whereas, you know, people lived raw and genuine in real lives, you know, when those kind of movies were made or those kinds of holy cards were made, right? And now we live in more of a fake world, and so we crave the real and the genuine and the authentic. I think it's kind of so we're looking for things to be more real.
But I think too, she loves old movies, And they made a lot of these like in the 40s and the 50s.
Bells of St. Mary is a great movie. Yeah, St. Bernadette, great movie. Yeah, those are really good Catholic movies. Those were like the blockbuster type movies.
They were high production.
Yeah,
they were making those. And I just think that obviously as the cultures went down, it wasn't a priority. Mm-hmm. But I think if they would have told the stories the way that they were truly were, that people would be more captivated. But if you just, I mean, obviously a story, there has to be the arc. You know, you got to have the story, the hero's journey, the fall, the up and down. If you just, oh, they're just perfect all the time. It's like, mm-hmm. it's not much of the, that hero's journey. And yeah. you know, that's, right. you know, that's part of the, how the stories were told. But mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a convert and my backstory is, you know, I'm a sinner, a bad sinner. I was a bad boy. And, you know, I had a major conversion and, you know, I'm attracted to those redemption stories and to see mm-hmm. those sides that, hey, you know, if he can do it, I can do it kind of stuff. And
yeah. So to paint saints in the, this is what they went through and this is how they overcame it. So it's yeah. something to look up to. I think with your movie though, it takes us into a different place. What I even got from the few minutes I watched the trailer was this, gosh, I never thought about what it was like to be in that bunker. Gosh, I never thought what it would have been like to be with a saint, but in the worst possible place in the world. Like, wow, yeah, like you half envy those prisoners because they were in the presence of this incredibly holy man that led them to joy even in the worst conditions. But, you know, watching it happen is, it takes, like it punched me in the stomach just in those few minutes.
Yeah, I've been really surprised by how emotional people have gotten just watching the trailer, mm-hmm. you know?
I teared up.
Like, I can't tell how many people, yeah, like, so many people tell me that they, like, or I've even watched them, you know, mm-hmm. tear up watching it. And, that energy that you felt was what we felt every single day for 12 hours a day while we were watching it, you know, yeah. happen in front of us. These sort of moments that feel so sacred because of the intensity of the suffering and the yearning that these men had for an answer from God as to like why he would let this happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that like it started in a way coming out of my own personal struggle with faith, but every single person who is participating from like the actors all the way through the people who are working on lighting or working on the snacks and working on the lunches, like all of us were in some way bringing our own suffering or our own questions or our own journeys of faith to God in the midst of the production. And the result was, you know, just like you would just walk into the back room and see all of these people just sort of like crying together or and you know, like that's not even like on set. It's like mm-hmm. that they're just like, you know, the people who are working on the art design or something mm-hmm. in the background. Like that energy just really was so present through the whole thing, and it felt to us like Colby was there meeting us in our lives in a very personal way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can feel it, you know, in the footage as you're watching it. There's something really special there about his presence.
Wow. Yeah, that's got to be something like how else do you explain it? You know, mm-hmm. it's like, you know, our Protestant brothers and sisters, I constantly get attacked about the saints. It's like, it's such a misunderstanding about the beauty of it, of they're our friends. You know, Jesus tells us that
they got our back.
He's the God of the living. He's not the God of the dead.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't get to heaven, if, you know, it's like, good luck for us. It's like, it's those witnesses. But like, yeah. you know, just this last Sunday, the reading was about, you know, the transfiguration and there's Moses and Elijah, you know, God, Jesus is showing us that no, you know, I'm the God of the living, and it's mm-hmm. like we have this cloud of witnesses cheering us on, and to be tapping into that in real time mm-hmm. in his homeland, covering the story, it's got to be something special.
So, when you were auditioning actors and actresses, what were you looking for in your Colby?
Oh man, I actually didn't hold any auditions for Colby.
Oh,
which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
When I first got there, I had already been put in touch with a Polish director who is sort of a similar space to me. He's my age and he's done a few different movies already, and he has worked with a few different Polish celebrities who were Catholic and who he had kind of found out were Catholic and he brought into his productions. Mm-hmm. And one of them, he told me, Anthony, this guy Marcin, he absolutely loves Maximilian Kolbe, and you should definitely talk to him about the role. So he set us up to have dinner together. We went over to his house, and from the moment that I sat down next to him, the like immediate first impression, I knew mm-hmm. that he knew Kolbe, that he knew the same person that I knew. And it's hard to describe the feeling. Like it was almost like falling in love or something, like the feeling of like meeting somebody, but not romantic, but mm-hmm. like a certain deep immediate connection that happened just from sitting down next to each other. And his story is that he had been an alcoholic, had really messed up his life, and he returned to his faith through his return to his fight to get sober. And Kolbe is the patron saint of addicts, which is sort of an interesting turn, kind of ironic, because he was never somebody that ever touched alcohol, and anybody that was caught smoking around him would be like, you know, kicked out of the community. He's like incredibly strict as a human being. But I think that because he was in this space of being trapped in a cell with these other men who had no hope of getting out, that feeling is very similar to the feeling of addiction. And the way that a person's personality is broken down by their shame in their addiction, it's the same kind of shame that broke down the human person in Auschwitz. And so I think that so many addicts that I know have this deep devotion to Kolbe. And when I met Marcin, I could tell that he didn't just know him superficially, like knowing his story. He had been touched by the kiss of Kolbe in a way. And so, yeah, I hired him then and there, and it was kind of immediate, like everything that happened from there was exactly how it was supposed to be.
That is so cool.
Wow. How did you get into filmmaking? Where did the passion come from? Always as a kid, were you like Polaroids and stealing cameras and running around? Like,
it's so funny. So many of my filmmaker friends, that's exactly how they grew up. I grew up as a homeschooled Catholic kid with, you know, just lots of books. I just read Lord of the Rings and C.S. Lewis and was completely inundated with books all the time.
It's your imagination.
Every day.
That's what it is.
And so that's what it was. It was definitely overboard. Like I was not very connected to reality after after that. But I went to public school when I was in seventh grade, and that started to shake me out of that and connect me with like what real people were experiencing in their lives. But I think that really formed me, and it certainly. I loved reading. I remember reading this comic book of St. Francis when I was a kid. I don't know if you ever came across these. I think they were like made in the 60s, but they were gritty. Like I remember looking at this image of St. Francis kissing a leper and just like being terrified, like absolutely terrified as a kid.
I've never seen these. But Bart Simpson had a couple comic books in an episode when he became Catholic for like 5 minutes. Did you ever see that? Yeah. That episode where Bart Simpson becomes Catholic? And he actually has all these comic books. And I always remember thinking like, that's not right. Like Catholics don't have saints comics books. We should. I didn't know that. So it must have been what they were referencing in the episode, and it went way over my head because I never had those.
Yeah, your mom wouldn't go for that.
Yeah, my mom would not like. Yeah, yeah. It's a good. It's obviously offensive. It's The Simpsons, but they do nail some things. They even have like Catholic heaven versus Protestant heaven.
That's what I was gonna say. Is that the episode where they have the Catholic heaven?
Yeah, and Homer has his first confession, and it's good.
Bard's playing the rosary and tells he's gonna pray for him. He's like, don't you pray for
in Latin? Yeah. There's a lot that's right on the nose, and then there's others like, okay, you went all right, but that's how the Simpsons are. But
and I think there's a I mean, just right now, I don't know if you're following around with the Hallow, the Walter Chizik story.
Yeah.
I mean, there's it's the number two book on like all of Amazon right now. Mm-hmm. And I just finished it. And I've read like Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. I read the abridged Gulag Archipelago. So I've been not obsessed, but kind of liking to go into this deep psychology of like, how does this happen? Like, what would I do in those kinds of situations? Yeah, really. Like these extreme examples of courage, you know, just with the Walter Chizik stuff, it's like, it's so crazy. 5 years in solitary confinement, no sound, no people, no nothing. It's like, these stories are captivating. And it's like, there's something to it that people are longing for these kind of like these stories, because I know it touches me. It's like, and I'm into a bunch of different things, but I like gravitate to these stories, especially all the stuff about these atrocities. And like a lot, I think, because we don't want this to repeat again. Like this is like a message of like, hey, it's, you know, freedom's not, you know, more than a generation away if we let it, you know? And it's like these people didn't die in vain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm interested in that too, because it feels to me like there's a huge movement towards those sorts of meditations right now. And I'm wondering, you guys are obviously kind of drinking from a Polish well in a lot of ways. Like being in Chicago, you just are if you're Catholic anyway. But it seems like you're kind of even intentionally drawn to the expression of faith that is Polish. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was never something I understood or had any connection to before. I honestly didn't like Colby when I first saw him because of his stern kind of demeanor, which of course is like, you know, it's very Polish. You look really, really icy. And then on the inside, you're just like the most hospitable person in the world. But I'm wondering if you feel like there's something from the Polish church and the Polish kind of history of Catholicism that we need right now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the town we grew up in, it's called Calumet City, but originally it was called Sobieski Park, like where, mm-hmm. you know, King Sobieski was the one who saved all of Christianity in Europe from the invading Turks. He was this Polish king who came down and literally like defeated like one of the largest armies through the, you know, the power of God and just how it all came together. But yeah, on the south side, like her mom is this Polish, you know. Like,
yeah. I think too, though, is our church that I grew up in is the center of the community, right? Like that's how they would have built their churches, these subdivisions, these towns, these little, you know, suburbs of Chicago have this church right in the middle and their houses built around it. And this church is gorgeous. I mean, these Polish immigrants who came to this country with nothing worked their butts off to build this gorgeous church with these, you know,
in
the middle of the Depression, you know. I think that there's a testimony to the fight and the grit and the work ethic of these people, of the Polish people, and that they don't give up and that they are
no nonsense.
They're strong willed and they're strong, you know. I mean, the things that they were able to accomplish with not much, with the little that they had, when you really look at these old churches that are in these suburbs in Chicago, it's almost kind of sad because so many of these communities are no longer don't longer have these roots in that Catholic faith that they once had. So it's just kind of like, I want to take our old church and I want to pick it up and put it, you know, somewhere else, because the community that was built around it does no longer supports it. Does that make sense? You know, so
But we also like I said, I go to the monastery, so we get to see it. Like they're all from Poland, so there's mm-hmm. six or seven priests at one time, the Carmelite Fathers in Munster, Indiana, mm-hmm. and they built a huge like a nice like compound where people can come. There's
a gorgeous shrine.
It's a shrine
with grottos and underground things.
But they're serious. Yeah, they're really nice. They're whole. You can feel the whole. I love going there. Mm-hmm. I love our parish. But this is something different.
They don't play. They take it serious.
They're holy. They're just holy people. They take their faith serious, and mm-hmm. you can just feel the holiness. Mm-hmm. It's like when you talk to them. Yeah, they're no nonsense, but they're prayerful.
They're funny too.
They're funny too. But it's just I don't know. I'm not Polish at all, but her, like her mom, they're Carmelites. Her mom's a third order Carmelite. And I know Max McColby was a Franciscan, correct? Yeah, he was a Franciscan. Right. Yeah. So yeah, I don't, we gravitate to our spiritualities a more Carmelite. Mm-hmm. We wore scapulars and we pray the rosary, and that's a lot of our spirituality. But yeah, they're tough people. So I think that's how we resonate. The South Side of Chicago, it's like we're
hardworking
fighters, you know, blue collar.
Family and faith are first. Yeah. And that's evident and still, you know, generations later.
Yeah, Poland is a place that has constantly been in a state of apocalypse, like ever since its founding, you know? And I feel like as Catholics now, like a lot of us are feeling this kind of, you know, this almost spooky winds of change that perhaps make us feel like we're headed into an apocalypse. Not to be like super dramatic, but like it feels like, you know, we're not headed towards like a fun time for the next like 10 years as Catholics. It seems like we're going to get called on and tested in our faith in a new way. And it feels to me like perhaps our attention as a church is sort of naturally going towards Poland because of, well, of course, JP2, who marked the church in such a profound way, and certainly our generation in such a profound way.
He's my favorite.
But Colby as well. Yeah. And because like these people stared down like the biggest dragons that our world has ever seen, and certainly as Christians that our church has ever stared down. And it seems like we have a lot to learn from them because, you know, fortunately, for whatever reason, since the last world war, we've gotten to experience a lot of comfort in the church. And that seems like that's not going to be the case going forward. So I don't know if perhaps that's part of why the curiosity is there. But certainly for me, I'm looking for examples of like, what do you do when you don't get the option to have the normal life that everybody else around you gets to have?
I think that it's also important to note that both JP2 and like St. Faustina and Maximilian Kolbe, there's that theme of mercy that just swells up in all those saints, you know, and I think you're right. I think there's something that's preparing us for something we might not be wanting to encounter, right? But we are also being called to be merciful and to show love even in these most difficult times, and how saints like that rise up out of that discomfort in order to bear, you know, be that witness to others in those times that, you know, I think that our culture itself is comfortable. And so when you talk about Catholic comfort, well, yeah, the church is decreasing in number in so many different places in this world, because it's God's, I think, calling us to be have quality over quantity, right? Like that those that are going to be remaining in the church are the ones that are going to represent it in a way that he wants us to represent it, you know, and to be that light and be that mercy into that world, that
to be obedient,
going
to
be
holy,
seeking,
to be saints.
Yeah, it's going to be seeking again that authenticity and that realness that is starting to be what people are longing for, you know?
Yeah.
And I think too that, you know, people are looking to these examples because they're looking at the culture, and it may take some miracles for some people, but there's a lot of bright spots, from the Hallow app being the number one app to this new book being number two on Amazon. There's some seeds there, but if the church does what it's supposed to do, if the leadership up top, like, you know, for too long they've just been complacent, or they want to think it's just a program, or just these different things that it's going to, you know, revolutionize the world. You know, they're on to something. What's going on with the Eucharist Congress? Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's it right there. It's like that's the church that spread throughout the world was spread based on Jesus and the Eucharist. That's mm-hmm. how it was conquered and is Christianized. And as the belief in the real presence decreased, Christianity is like inversely proportioned mm-hmm. to the belief in the real true presence of mm-hmm. that's how, you know, Jesus was spread, actually body, blood, soul, and divinity. Mm-hmm. So at least they finally understood. It's the first Congress they've called in 83 years this summer in Indianapolis, this this huge, you know, Congress for the Eucharist. It's like, okay, all right, now we're talking, now you're talking sense. You want the superpower. That's it right there. You want to supercharge the world. It isn't going to be, hey, let's felt banners or hey, let everyone feel good or whatever these things that they tried in the 70s and 80s. So many people have fallen away. It's like, no, the people are going
to
fall away.
Back to the real.
That's it. Let's be serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's something about the way that God, the way that God will strip us through suffering, mm-hmm. in a way that brings us back to and reminds us of what the true point of everything is.
Right.
You know, and somehow in that stripping and in that rediscovery, we actually get to rediscover the joy of our salvation and the hope of it. And the world almost goes into this sort of technicolor, multicolor like vision where we get to see the Spirit so much more alive in us and in the world around us, precisely in the times of the stripping, which is kind of a strange, it's a strange thing, but it's also very clear that that's how the church has grown. Yes. It's grown the most.
Yeah, that's
and it's nothing new. And it's nothing new. Yeah, like we have to, this isn't anything.
Well, that's
we're not special
said.
In that sense that we're, you know, oh, it's going to be hard for us. It's like, it's right. never been easy to be a Christian, yeah. right?
Well, Jesus said that it's going to, a grain of wheat's going to, has to die to bring much fruit. Mm. And, you know, Tertullian's famous saying is the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. And a martyr like Colby or these people, that witness is where they literally build churches on top of their bones where mm-hmm. they were, you know, Charles Luanga or you name all these saints where they were lived a life of heroic virtue or were martyred. They'll build a church right there. And like, that's the witness. That's tangible.
That's true love.
Yes.
He embodied true love. And that shows in his dying for that other, you know, person. It, you can't stop that. Like you can't kill that love that you killed that person.
And
right. But you can't kill that love.
That comes back to the title of the movie, the triumph of the heart. It's like, you can't kill a saint by killing it. You just make us stronger. You know, that's like, you know, that's the thing. It's like, it's how we multiply. It's like, that's what they thought. The Romans thought that that's what they were going to do. They're going to extinguish the flame and then love. You can't get rid of love. It just multiplies. Right. You know, it's just, there's no subtracting it. Well, I don't, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The last thing that I'll say is, I really believe that Colby gave the other men in that cell a taste of heaven.
Yes.
And that there was real, actual, palpable moments of joy and of love that happened in that place. And I think that it's such a beautiful testament to the fact that the gospel really is the pearl of great price. Like Christ's love is worth more than everything else in the world. And even when everything else in the world is stripped, it is still the most powerful force. It's still the most beautiful and life-giving and satisfying thing that we could have access to. And it's sad that it takes suffering to remind us to go to that well, the truth is that it's always there for us. And I just wanted to end kind of my thoughts with that because it feels like, I don't know. It's just, it feels relevant to what we've been talking about. And,
Just what hit that C.S. Lewis quote is that, you know, especially in a world of today where everyone's calling for your attention and all these things that God uses pain like a megaphone to reach us. You know, sometimes he has to shout at us. It's the only way to get our attention because everybody's on their phones or they're busy or busying about and football and gambling and all these things are distracting. Sometimes it takes shaking us by our, you know, I know that's what he did to me, you know, so it's just one of those things where really appreciate you taking the time and sharing this story.
God bless you in this awesome journey and ministry that you have. This is so exciting. I literally cannot wait to see this movie. So let's go.
We're going to share everything, but just for people who are just listening, may not go to the caption. Mm-hmm. You want to tell us how they can find you on Kickstarter or any of those?
Any ways that we could support you, going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So, prayer, obviously, like, I think that all of us who've been working on the project have faced like tremendous resistance spiritually in different ways in our our lives.
Means you're doing something right. That means you're on the right track.
And I truly believe that the groundswell of prayer of the grassroots Catholic community coming around us and kind of being like, no, we're not letting you take this one, Satan. Like, we've got their backs. Like, that has provided so many miracles for us that we've needed in order to survive. So that, I can't ask for enough. And then, if you'd like to find out more, you can go to triumphoftheheart.com, to find out more about the movie. And that'll link you to the crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter that we're running right now. The last thing that I'll say about that is that, what we really need is we both need funds to help us finish it and make it excellent and make it a work of true art. But we also have to publicly prove that there's a market there for this movie. Yeah. And every cent that we get, it does not matter how much, it's really the quantity. If distributors see there's thousands of people who are willing to put in money, real money, to see this movie come about, they're going to think very hard before they turn it down, even if it's not something that they would have naturally or normally put out. And so if we want to really get a full release, like a theatrical release, I really want to just, encourage everybody who's listening to go and take a look at the crowdfunding campaign and consider putting in even just $5, $10 to say, hey, I vote for this to get made.
Got it. So we'll each individually make a donation. So then they get two instead of our name together.
Now you're talking.
Double it up. Got it. I get it. I get what you're saying.
All right. Perfect. Well, we appreciate your time. We're so excited. This is awesome. So
thank you so much for having us on. Thank you for the work that you guys do and for your podcast. It's always really great. I'm looking forward to listening to the next guest that you guys have on.
All right. Awesome. All right. Thanks a lot. Have a good night.